Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who will allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. So stay tuned. This is Bill Hendrickson, your host of Time Out, in a cloudy but pleasant day in Carborough, North Carolina. And what could be more pleasant for me than looking across the table here at a friend who's been over here a number of times, Liz Gallops.
Thank you for having me back.
Welcome. And as I told her the last time she was here, I thought she was going to deliver her baby right here in the studio, but the baby is now 9 months old.
She is, yes.
Wow. Well, Liz has been a friend for quite a few years, and she's in the world of health insurance and other aspects of the health care world. And Rob, if you'd like to listen, oh, you're not going to listen today. You're going to another event, but Rob, you should listen to this later. We're recording it because you'll learn everything you didn't know about health insurance and other issues. So stick around, and thanks for doing your show this afternoon. You had some great music.
Thank you.
Okay, Liz, how long have you been in this world of health insurance?
11 years now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you started as a How did you get into it?
My parents have been in the field for decades. I won't say how many, because the lady never says.
Well, I know
right.
Your parents, so I can judge myself.
But they had their own agency, and after completing my master's degree, they offered to have me come on board with them and try out the field. And I said, okay, I'll try it out.
And you had a master's degree in education.
Correct.
Administration.
Yes.
Not even insurance wasn't a word you knew.
Not at all. And then a bachelor's, in fact, in Spanish and sociology. So no background at all in business or finance necessarily or insurance. And they offered me to get licensed and check out the industry, and I was intrigued by it. And I told myself I would give it 5 years, and if I was still interested at the end of 5 years, I'd stay in. If I wasn't, I could always return back to my field of study for my master's program. And mm-hmm. Here it is 11 years later now.
Well, boy, a lot has changed in these 11 years, hasn't it?
It has. It's constantly changing.
So how do you compare 2017 to 2006?
Oh, gosh. Things were a little simpler back then, pre-healthcare reform. You know, everybody had to apply to get covered and pass through underwriting. Not everybody had to have health insurance, right? There wasn't this mandate of individual responsibility. Employers weren't mandated to offer coverage if they were of a certain size. So it was a very different field. People could get turned down for health coverage back then. And we as a state were in a good place because we had a well-run state high-risk pool that those individuals could go to.
I remember that, yes. Well, and you were involved when the state was in charge of all insurance, as opposed to federal government.
Yes.
And when I was doing all the kind of work years ago and had my business in New York, I was involved with state work. And, of course, New York State's somewhat different than North Carolina. But still, everything went through the state insurance department. And now everything goes through CMS in Washington or Health and Human Services or whatever. Mm-hmm. How do you what's the comparison with how you deal with the insurance policies and the insurance clients today versus 11 years ago?
Sure. If the person is buying what we would call an individual policy off the marketplace, meaning not through healthcare.gov, because here in our state of North Carolina, we use the federal marketplace, which is healthcare.gov, uh-huh. Then it is reminiscent of how it was pre-healthcare reform, where you're interacting directly between the agent and the consumer and the insurance carrier, and it's the three of you working together. Mm-hmm. When we go through the marketplace, which is healthcare.gov, it's a very different experience for all parties involved.
Which is what you're doing.
Correct. Right. So if somebody's buying through healthcare.gov, which most people would only do if they were going to qualify for tax credits to help them pay for their health insurance, mm-hmm. Then we are bound by the federal policies and the federal website and the federal administrative process. We could run a little bit slower than if it was just the agent, consumer, and the insurance carrier, mm-hmm. but they do that, of course, to keep everything status quo across the board between mm-hmm. the states using the marketplace.
So when you have a customer that or a person comes to you and inquiring about health insurance, where do you go?
I typically like to pre-screen them first to figure out whether or not they would likely qualify for tax credits. If they're going to qualify for tax credits or potentially could qualify for tax credits, then I will send them through healthcare.gov, and agents can assist in that process.
You can assist in that,
correct.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Assisters can assist in that process, so they don't have to go it alone. You know, if they can use a trained professional like an agent or broker, I would encourage them to do that. If they're not going to qualify for tax credits, then we send them directly through the carrier, which, of course, the agent can assist on as well. Now, navigators and assisters can't go directly to the carrier. They can't assist in that process, only through healthcare.gov.
Well, I have my own opinion about navigators, so I won't bring that up because I had a couple of them on my show here, and I decided they belong somewhere else. But so if they're not going to .gov, what markets are available to them? How do you find a place to put them?
Well, unfortunately, there's just not a lot of competition left in North Carolina. At the start of healthcare reform, we had a number of major carriers who were participating in our state. We had Humana, United Healthcare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Coventry, which is now Aetna. As of 2018, we are only going to have Blue Cross Blue Shield and Cigna available.
Cigna's coming
in our state.
Back.
They are coming back.
Which is interesting.
And they will be in the general triangle area, not all of the triangle, but for most of the triangle, they will be an option. Anybody outside of that footprint will only have Blue Cross Blue Shield to choose from, either on the marketplace via through healthcare.gov or even off the marketplace. Mm-hmm. It's just Blue Cross and 95.
So when Cigna comes back, Cigna wasn't known for writing individual policies.
They weren't, not pre-healthcare reform, at least not in our state of North Carolina. Correct.
But they will be writing single policies. That's
correct.
Your market, right?
You, it is.
Particularly dealing with individuals or maybe
correct.
Families.
You got it.
Yeah.
And so Cigna will be an option this year, and they were an option last year as well. So they are set to come back. We haven't seen plans or prices yet, and they technically don't have to release that until November 1st, mm-hmm. which is the beginning of open enrollment.
So you've been in business for a long time, 11 years, but you have clients that you – became clients 10 years ago, mm-hmm. 8 years ago. What's the condition of the health insurance that they bought then compared to what they have now, and you're still the agent?
Sure. If somebody doesn't qualify for tax credits, i.e. through healthcare.gov, in general, health insurance is more expensive and, in general, less rich than what it used to be in the past. In fact, Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina will no longer allow grandfathered plans to continue for 2018. They were the last carrier in our state that allowed grandfathered plans. Grandfathered plans are people who bought individual plans pre-healthcare reform.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we had the promise with healthcare reform that if you like your plan, you can keep it. Mm-hmm. And so the administration allowed for these plans to be grandfathered mm-hmm. so that individuals could keep those plans as long as they were offered. And historically, those plans had richer benefits than what we see today in many cases when it comes to deductibles and maximum out-of-pockets. And the premiums were significantly less.
So what's happening to the policies that people have? Costs are up, but they're not as rich. So how are you helping people with their budgets?
Sure. Well, and people who are moving to healthcare reform compliant plans, which now as of 2018, everybody will be on healthcare reform compliant plans, right? They do come with added benefits that we didn't have prior. Built-in maternity coverage on all policies.
These are the things that the administration wants to get rid of.
Correct. The current administration.
You're right.
But all these plans have certain benefits that we didn't have before. So I guess in that regard, the plans today could be maybe more rich in those categories than what we had before. But in general, deductibles are up, out-of-pocket maximums are up, and premiums are up.
Well, have you seen any of your clients really financially suffer, that they had to cancel, they couldn't afford it, or whatever? Have you seen or couldn't go to the doctor enough because their deductibles were too high? Have you seen any real harm?
Oh, sure. We had that pre-healthcare reform, and we have it post-healthcare reform. It just is in different forms now. So the way that consumers are hurt today is if you don't qualify for tax credits, the actual retail price for health insurance for a lot of people has become unaffordable. So there's going to be this new population of uninsured where in the past, it was lower income individuals who couldn't afford the premiums, but now those individuals may qualify for tax credits. So the new group of uninsured are going to be kind of that upper middle class folks. They make a little too much to qualify for tax credits, or maybe they own their own business, but don't have enough employees to actually get a group policy, right? Mm-hmm. So they make too much to qualify for tax credits, but not enough to pay, you know, $2,500 a month in premiums for health insurance, mm-hmm. which is not an unheard of premium
mm-hmm.
nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy, it is. So where does this – aren't there a lot of people that don't fall anywhere? Like they don't have Medicaid and they don't – they can't qualify for tax credits, so they're in the middle of no man's land or no person's land.
We are one of the states that did not expand Medicaid. So when health care reform was passed, it was intended that anybody who fell below a certain income level, 150% of federal poverty level, would qualify for Medicaid in their state. Well, when the Supreme Court ruled on health care reform, one of the pieces they overruled was that portion of the law. And they said, you can't make states have to cover folks for Medicaid that they're not already covering. And so our state chose not to expand Medicaid, which means it is possible in our state for you to make too little to qualify for tax credits. Mm-hmm. And if you're not somebody who's, you know, pregnant, disabled, or a child who meets the income requirements to qualify for Medicaid, you are left, as you said, without any options. It's too expensive to buy health insurance.
You can't buy it yourself.
Right. You don't make enough to qualify for tax credits, right. mm-hmm. and you can't qualify for Medicaid because you don't meet the state's mm-hmm. Medicaid rules.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Liz Gallops, and I hope everything she said has been committed to memory, because we're going to have a test after this program. Liz has been involved with health insurance for, as she said, for 11 years. I first met her when I was actively involved in the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters, which happens to be an underwriter of this particular radio show. And she worked herself, or her mother was president, her father was president, and I guess it's kind of the family kind of took over the Triangle Association of Health. She was president. She became the state president of the State Association of Health Underwriters, and she involved nationally with the Vanguard Group, young people in the business, mm-hmm. and she's been a leader in the National Association of Health Underwriters, headquartered in Washington. And I expect, Liz, you will be the president of that organization someday if you stay in the business.
Oh, gosh, the kids would have to be a little bit older before I went down that road.
Oh, bring the kids to Washington. They'd love it. People would love to see your family.
Yes.
But I, you know, with people like you who really know the business and are willing to put yourself out to help the clients, it's really essential. Okay. So at renewal time, what's the trend over the last 5-6 years?
Oh, sure. Renewal premium increases, you know, in the 20% range typically.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We expect to see about 14% out of Blue Cross Blue Shield this year, about 20% out of Cigna for this year. Now, that's an average, which spread across the entire state. So some people could get zero and some people could get, 28%. Mm-hmm. It's an average. Mm-hmm. And those who qualify for tax credits will have most of that increase absorbed for them by virtue of having those tax credits. Because as premiums go up, your tax credits go up. But those who do not qualify for tax credits...
So you get... More credit as your premium goes up?
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen that with your clients?
Yes. In fact, for 2017, if somebody was here in the Triangle with Blue Cross Blue Shield, they actually got a decrease if they were through the marketplace.
Oh, really?
Most of those folks got a decrease.
That didn't make the papers.
It did not. And that was because it's a function of the way that they calculate the tax credits in accordance with the way that the premiums are for the year.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who gets those tax credits will have most of their premium increase absorbed for them. Those who don't are going to bear the full brunt of it.
So are people coming to you? Are you getting new clients?
Oh, yes, every day.
Wow, okay.
We don't have 100% of North Carolinians insured yet. So until
you're working
we do,
on it. Okay.
There's always going to be people to help.
Now, your mother has never been in the individual side. Has she been in the group side?
She has always worked with employers, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. And she still is.
She does.
And your father has been I consider him him the genius mechanic of the organization.
Correct. He's the brains behind the curtain pulling all the strings.
There he goes. I don't know what he's up to these days. I haven't asked him any questions, but I know he's very busy. Every time we have a meeting of the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters, he has a hand in it, whether he's doing the program or whether he just introducing the program. He has something to say about it.
Oh, yes. In fact, he's helping plan next month's luncheon, which is going to have representatives from the three major hospital systems.
I saw that.
Triangle.
I signed up for that. Yeah,
correct. They're going to be there to present and talk about how healthcare reform has impacted their hospital systems, how growth in the Triangle has impacted their hospital systems. And it's really interesting to hear what they have to say from their perspective on how everything plays out.
Well, we are all involved with the National Association of Health Underwriters, who has a very active organization in Washington. How do you feel that what they are doing to support your profession is helpful, and how do you feel what they are doing to help influence legislation? Do you think we're having an active, positive result?
Oh, sure. Yeah. NAHU is widely sought after in D.C. from a policy and legislative standpoint to get their opinion on what is happening on the ground. And I think where NAHU's influence is greatest is on the regulatory side. So people don't often realize that once a law is passed, that's not necessarily the end-all be-all of it.
Right.
In fact, there's lots of regulations that have to happen in order to orchestrate and make the law occur. And so the regulatory side is often one of the areas where you can have the greatest impact, because that's where all the little nuances are worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where NAHU really shines.
Well, as the Congress has been fooling around with possible overhaul of this situation, and Trump sticks his nose in it once in a while and doesn't know what he's doing, it seems to me that the CMS, what's that called? The
Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Yeah.
Maybe they could just make adjustments without all this legislative activity and get things where they are working better.
Correct. And in fact, I think it's the tinkering with the law that actually is the biggest issue, because it creates instability in the market and it creates a lot of questions for the insurance carriers. They can't plan, they can't underwrite if there's this threat that some of the law could change. And so tweaking the regulations around the law can often happen without any kind of legislative change, right?
Sure.
It's just the administrative bodies making those changes. And it's these little tiny nuances that could help stabilize the market. Because until people stop messing with it, right?
Yeah.
It's never going to stabilize out.
Well, as you said earlier in the show, that there's a lot of things being said weekly by the government with regulations, but couldn't we just take a decent set of regulations like that our organization and maybe other qualified organizations present to them, and gradually modify the ACA into something that is acceptable to people?
Correct, yes. I think that's something that could be done. Every day a step closer to that, and then you have an administrative change. And once you have a political administration change, especially one that is such a polar opposite of the prior administration, it takes time to get back in there and build the connections with the new administration to have to put and try to tweak these regulatory changes. But we're working on it. We've already seen some changes.
That's good. Well, the Republicans always said we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare, and they're far from it.
Correct.
it's kind of laughable, but in a way it's sad because, some people are suffering.
Right, and it creates instability.
Right, right. And the insurance companies, who a lot of people criticize and a lot of people praise, have to watch themselves, because they have to stay viable financially to stay in the business.
Correct. I think the best example of that is Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina, and I keep going back to them because, again, they have 95% of the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or they're the only option in 95% of the state, is there's one function of folks who go through healthcare.gov, and it's called cost-sharing reductions. And it's essentially where somebody, because of their income, qualifies to have their plan benefits enhanced, even though they don't pay a higher premium for
those
enhancements.
Say that again? They qualify to what?
To have their plan benefits enhanced without them actually paying a higher premium. So, for example, somebody who qualifies for cost-sharing reductions could buy a silver-level plan. Okay, all plans are lumped into metal categories now, gold, silver, bronze.
Right.
They buy a silver-level plan, depending on their income, not only do they get tax credits to help pay for that silver-level plan, but they get these cost-sharing reductions where the insurance companies will take the silver-level plan benefits and change them to gold or even platinum level benefits. But the consumer.
Can they do that?
They can. It's called cost sharing reductions.
Okay.
And the consumer still only pays their silver premium price.
So the consumer is getting a better deal.
Correct. And it's all based off of income. But the Trump administration has continually threatened to not reimburse the insurance companies for those cost sharing reductions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what that does is the insurance companies then have to budget and they then have to propose premium increases in case they don't get that money. So Blue Cross Blue Shield openly said we would have less than a 10% increase if the current administration would just confirm that they're going to continue to pay for cost sharing reductions. But since they can't, we are going to apply for this 14, almost 15% increase instead. And that's a real, those are real dollars coming out of North Carolinians' pockets because there's that instability. They don't know. The insurance companies don't know. Are we going to get this money back from the federal government that they said we would get when we submitted these plans? Or are they not? And now we're going to be on the hook for it.
Well, what is the combination of conditions caused rates to go up?
Well,
you're an actuary now.
Exactly. Well, I think in the an oversimplification would be anytime you offer coverage to anybody, regardless of pre-existing health conditions, and they can get those covered health conditions, or get those health conditions covered right away as soon as their policy starts, immediately there's going to be price increases that come with that. Also, there are certain benefits built into healthcare reform compliant plans now that we didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier, maternity care is on every single policy, individual policy now.
Whether you're 60-year-old or 20-year-old.
Yeah, you could be an 8-year-old boy and you have maternity coverage built into your plan. But that spreads the risk and the cost out across everybody. They also cap your potential out-of-pocket costs as a consumer. And so where pre-healthcare reform, it was not unheard of for somebody to be allowed to buy a $10,000 deductible or even a $20,000 deductible, right? Mm-hmm. They just wanted the lowest monthly premium.
Mm-hmm.
They were willing to self-insure for that first $10,000 or $20,000, and that's all they needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Post-healthcare reform, you can't do that now. Every year you're capped at the potential maximum out-of-pocket a person can have.
Maximum amount of pocket that they have to pay themselves.
Correct.
Okay.
And that maximum out of pocket right now, or actually for next year, I should say, since we're thinking about 2018, is $7,350. So that's the most potential exposure somebody could have out of their pocket. If they have a $200,000 hospital bill, right?
Uh-huh.
That's the most that they could come out of their pocket is that $7,350.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-healthcare reform, if they wanted to buy a $20,000 deductible plan, they could.
So these are some of the reasons the premium does go up.
Correct.
Have you seen people go in and out based on getting their pre-existing condition paid for and then drop the insurance, which some people said was going to happen?
I haven't seen that, not a whole lot. I think in general, people want to be insured if they can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the caveat, is if they can afford it. You know, in general, people want to do what's right and they want to be insured and they want to be covered. The sad part of that now is if you don't qualify for those tax credits, it's pretty unaffordable to be covered now.
Okay. Okay. Well, so, but your clients are staying with you.
Yes. Those who can afford to continue to keep coverage. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you say you're getting new clients too. Now, what are prompting the new clients coming to you? They don't have insurance or they don't like their agent, or what brings you clients?
Sure. I don't get a whole lot of people who were previously uninsured. I don't get a whole lot of previously uninsured folks.
Okay.
I think those who want and can afford insurance for the most part have bought it now.
Mm-hmm.
But we do still run into people whose insurance at work has become unaffordable. Maybe they can't afford to keep their child or their spouse on at work. So they'll come over and see me. I work with an agency that has quite a few employers that we work with.
So we have over
400 employers that we work with in our agency. And so they feed referrals over to me.
Winston-Salem, you've been working with?
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Even though I'm based here in Raleigh.
Right.
And then a lot of Medicare still. So there's a huge population of Medicare folks coming in. Now, that's not germane to this conversation about
So you're writing Medicare supplement policies for them?
Okay. Correct.
Well, that's it, because I have one of those, obviously. And I have it through AARP, through United Healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you can't sell that, I guess, because it's AARP doesn't sell through agents.
They do, actually.
Oh, they do?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I should get something better from you than I got from my...
What you have now might be great.
I don't know.
Be perfect for you. Yeah.
I'm lucky because when I sold my business in New York to my son, I made a contract with him that he would pay for my health insurance as long as I was
alive. Oh, that's
alive.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So that's great. So he probably not too happy because I'm getting older all the time. And I keep getting letters from AARP, your premium's going up, and dental insurance, he's paying my dental insurance too. So,
but Medicare's been insulated for the most part from all those rate hikes that we've seen in the individual side, individual non-Medicare side, and from the rate hikes that we've seen on the employer side. Medicare has stayed largely insulated from
all that. Is it pretty clean in North Carolina, Medicare programs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a fantastic Medicare program.
One of my friends in Long Island does a lot of that business. That's all he does. But he said, oh, a couple of years ago, the insurance company, whichever company it was, changed the thing all around. I had to go and rewrite everybody.
Oh my goodness!
And
that
he was going crazy with
that.
But you're it's pretty easy here.
It's
We've
got a great market
stable here,
and we have one of the fastest growing senior over 65 populations here in North Carolina. So we've had a lot of new carriers come into the state and are looking to offer plans. So there's a lot of competition out there. So
very
consumers have a lot to choose from.
I didn't know you were working in that market. So that's terrific. And so your reputation is expanding from 25-year-olds to 75-year-olds.
Well, unfortunately, when insurance commissions were to agents were cut back in 2016 now, a lot of agents had to look to starting to specialize in other fields. Some moved to Medicare, like myself, and helping that population. Other agents have moved to life insurance or long-term care. Whatever they need to do to keep the businesses and their doors open.
The association we're both members of has lost some membership because of some of these changes that were forced on people.
Oh, sure. A lot of people retired out. I mean, brokers in general, at least for health insurance, don't tend to be a young bunch.
Yeah. Right. Not like you.
So
are you 30 yet?
Bless you. So there was already a large group of people who were getting ready to retire out anyways. So we saw a lot of consolidation with the passage of healthcare reform. A lot of these smaller independent agencies, for example, my parents' agency, there was the three of us working. They sold out to a larger agency, as did many folks, because they needed the resources and assets that the larger agencies had in order to compete with all the regulatory changes with healthcare reform and everything that employers needed to do. You know, the larger agencies had the capital and the tools that the employers were looking for. So a lot of people sold out and either joined those agencies or unfortunately just retired.
But I've noticed in the meetings that the Triangle Association has, the meetings have been different now. They've been more involved with some heavy technical stuff.
Correct.
And we have people from Washington come down, and next month you have this program you just mentioned with three representatives of local hospitals, and which means that the education level of the health insurance agency world has had to rise.
Oh, yes.
The quality of your knowledge has to be much, much deeper.
Correct.
Than it was when even 11 years ago when you started.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, individuals to the agents themselves, nobody's doing this part-time. You're not a part-time health insurance broker, right?
That's right,
Because you can't do it. You can't compete that way. You have to not only do it full-time, you have to specialize in certain areas. That's why please don't ask me any questions about employer group coverage, because that's not where I specialize anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's every niche area has changed so much and become so specialized that you really have to know what you're doing. I kind of liken it to, you know, before the market crash of 2008, you know, everybody knew a realtor, right?
And
some people did, you know, they were realtors on the side, right? Well, it was kind of that way with health insurance too, unfortunately. It was very easy to work in the field. The commissions for that field were really great. Oftentimes you got paid a percentage of the premium. So if the premium went up, your commissions went up, even though you didn't actually do any
more work.
That's
the way it was
when
I was in business,
right?
Sure.
But now post-healthcare reform, you can't do that. You have to work hard. You have to specialize if you want to stay in the market. And that's what we have left. So agents that are left today, they know their stuff.
Well, that's pretty obvious with you. When I was selling health insurance in Buffalo, New York, for what predated Cigna, the old Connecticut General, I was selling plans as a company rep to the local brokers, hospitalization benefits at $15 a day. Can you believe that?
I can't.
And we, you know, you're absolutely right. As premiums went up, our commissions went up, and it was a simple package we were selling to employers. And, you know, I thought I was smart, but I guess I wasn't very smart. I couldn't do today what you're doing, believe me. Anyway, you're listening to a conversation with Liz Gallops. It's now a little after 5:30. I want to tell you that you're listening to WCOM, your voice in the community. WCOM is supported by people in the community and people elsewhere, individuals and businesses. And as I mentioned, the association that Liz is a member of, the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters, which is a group of professionals just like Liz. Maybe they're not quite as good as Liz, but they're professionals. If they want to stay in this organization, they have to know what they're doing, and they are an underwriter of this show. You can go to our website, which is WCOMFM.org, and you can make a safe and secure donation to this great radio station, or you can come by here. We are at 300 East Main Street in Carrboro, and slip an envelope with a check in it under the door, and you will be given credit. We are a full-fledged nonprofit, and any money you pay to us is a full tax deductible for yourself. And we speak about taxes a lot when we're talking about insurance.
Yes, we do, which I never thought you would have your income and taxes tied directly to your health insurance.
I know. It's a very complex world that you're in. You know, now some people say, oh, let's get rid of all this and have a single-payer system. So I'm sure you have a comment or two.
Yeah, and while single-payer systems have worked pretty well in other countries, I think our country is a long way away from a single-payer system. Just the way that our healthcare is delivered in the United States, the way patients have come to expect and demand a certain amount and certain level of healthcare at a certain, you know, timeliness to it, I don't know that the population of the United States is ready for that yet. Now, we do all, understandably, have the federal government is the largest payer of health care in the United States when you factor in Medicaid and Medicare. Mm-hmm. And even those systems are constantly up for debate, right? We know that there's not enough money in Medicare,
right,
to help fund it.
Right.
Medicaid, we're always in debate over Medicaid funding and whether or not it should be privatized, should it not. So I think it's too dramatic of a shift for our country and the way our population and the way Americans expect and deserve to get their health care.
Well, I think one thing that would shut it off before it gets very far is the fact that when you have a single payer system, everybody has to pay for it. And the taxes are high. You know what people pay in taxes in other countries, particularly European countries, for their general welfare programs.
Correct.
The taxes are very high.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with the kind of demonstrations we have in Congress now, even if it were more left-leaning, I don't think Congress would be willing to
legislate
those increase. High taxes that have to go to a single-payer
system.
Correct.
It's a hard pill to swallow, especially if you're not an American who is in favor of
right. And Vermont actually had one on the ballot, and it was defeated.
Correct. So did California, actually, recently.
Did they?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So as what you're saying, it doesn't look like it's in the offing for a while.
Not in any near future, I don't think. Not here in the United States. No.
And it won't affect me, but if it does take place in the next 20, 30 years, you'll notice it.
Correct. And I think we would be better served as a population to get the cost of healthcare under control as opposed to worrying so much about the funding mechanism for it. And that's really what ACA was just a law to change the funding mechanism of paying for health insurance. It didn't go far enough in actually controlling the cost of healthcare. And until we do that, we're just going to keep bleeding money, whether in tax dollars, paying for credits for mm-hmm. people to buy coverage through the health insurance, healthcare.gov, or through consumers and paying outrageous premiums.
Well, when the ACA was first legislated, the agreement was the insurance companies said, we will cover all of these issues like pre-existing conditions mm-hmm. and extend coverage for lifetime and that type of thing if everybody is covered.
Correct.
And that never happened.
Right. If everybody plays, right.
Right. And that would have worked, actually.
It potentially could have worked.
Right.
But you got to use either what, the carrot or the stick method, right? And the carrot method to get people covered is here's your tax credits, right? We're going to make the health insurance so affordable to you that you're going to want to buy it because it's just so inexpensive for the coverage. Or you have to use the stick method, which is the penalty, right? That tax penalty for being uninsured. But the tax penalty is so low compared to the actual price of health mm-hmm. insurance. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, if you're somebody who's stuck paying the penalty, it sure still feels like a lot. But $695 or 2.5% of your income is nothing compared to the actual retail price of the health insurance.
Now, you are insured yourself.
I am through my employer.
Mm-hmm. Through the employer. Okay, mm-hmm. you're still on that company's payroll.
Correct.
Whatever it is. Okay. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, you would be covering yourself and your family by on yourself.
Correct.
So have you ever figured out how much that would cost?
I wouldn't be able to afford to cover a family of four.
Oh, really?
Because we wouldn't qualify for tax credits.
No, okay.
There's no way.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. There's no way we'd be able to afford to cover us.
So what would you do?
I don't know what we would do. We would probably look for some type of alternative like I've offered to clients, which is doing short-term medical plans, although the Obama administration limited severely the time frame that one can keep a short-term medical plan. They limited it to 90 days, where before it was up to a year you could keep a policy.
Uh-huh.
Although there are rumors the Trump administration is actually going to undo that regulation mm-hmm. to allow people to keep it for longer. So that's one option. The medical sharing programs have become very popular as well.
So what's that?
You may have heard of companies like MediShare.
Okay.
Yeah, they tend to be these either Christian or faith-based organizations.
Groups. Right, okay.
Correct.
Faith-based groups.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where you pay a membership fee, not a premium, but a membership fee.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, you have a network of providers that you stick to. And if you have a healthcare cost incur, a.k.a. a claim, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not health insurance, so we're not allowed to use those same terms,
okay.
but it's like a claim. Then the program either reimburses you or the program can immediate real time pay the provider and you're left paying a set fee for that occurrence, a.k.a. a copay.
have you ever analyzed the success, financially success of those sharing programs?
They have become hugely popular.
Really?
Because of healthcare reform
uh-huh.
for those consumers who cannot afford to buy traditional major medical. And what those programs do is there is a piece in healthcare reform that says if you're on one of these health sharing programs, you meet the requirement for being insured, even though technically it's not health insurance.
Okay.
So there is no tax penalty if you're on one of these programs.
Uh-huh.
And that's what makes them so incredibly attractive to people.
So, but like Duke Medical, Wake Med, will they accept patients?
They can. Mm-hmm.
And
they can.
Of course, you don't know. Do you know what you're going to get as a way of a benefit? If you go into the hospital for 10-day confinement, do you know what you're going to get in the way of payment by your sharing plan versus what you might be getting under Obamacare?
It depends on the company. So I've seen it operate two different ways. I've seen
These are not companies, though.
Well, programs,
yeah,
I
okay.
guess.
They're,
yeah.
They're
not health insurance companies, no.
Yeah.
They very clearly state they're not health insurance,
right? Are they associations? How are they structured?
They're membership programs, okay. I guess is the best way to
put it. All right.
So I've seen one version where you essentially have a fixed amount of responsibility. Let's call it equivalent to a deductible. I'm willing to take the first $5,000 of any exposure in a given year,
okay,
or given, you know, admission into the hospital, mm-hmm, whatever it is, however it's set up. And then anything after that, the health sharing program will pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I've seen other versions where they go, okay, you're going to have X amount out of your pocket. Again, like, mm-hmm, similar to like a deductible,
okay,
that you're going to have to meet, and you know you're going to pay it right then and there. Or if you go to the doctor's office, you're going to pay a set, I can't even call it a copay because it's not health insurance, but it's, yeah, the equivalent to a copay,
mm-hmm,
that you're going to pay when you go into the doctor. You, mm-hmm, pay $20 when
a
you
fee,
go in. Right,
a fee, or something. Yeah, okay.
What have you. So each plan operates a little bit differently.
So have these are these plans all okay, or they have, uh-huh, some gone out of business, or what's the financial result of some of them?
Well, and that's the big question, is these plans have been around for a long time.
But not,
obviously,
not
they
as
haven't
popular
had
as they are now.
Exactly, yeah. And they've had this huge surge of people coming in. Obviously, some of these people have health risks, right? And
sure,
some of these programs will not cover pre-existing health conditions. Other ones will cover pre-existing health conditions. So each one's a little bit different.
See.
You,
okay,
got to do your research. But that question does come up, and for us as agents, typically our errors and omissions insurance that every agent has,
right,
to carry,
mm-hmm,
right, in case one of we make a mistake, doesn't cover these types of plans.
It does not.
No, you have to buy a separate policy.
But there is a policy available.
Correct. But then it comes down to, will this policy cover
different kinds of legislative legal problems.
Correct. Or like to your point, what if the company goes insolvent?
Yeah.
You know, then the errors and omissions doesn't kick in usually, mm-hmm, if the company,
sure,
goes insolvent.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these little questions, and there is inherent risk in these plans. But for many consumers, if the other alternative is to run naked and have no coverage whatsoever, it beats the alternative.
So have you competed in a way, or have you seen your clients people come to you and leave you to go there, or come to you from there?
I have not had a single person come to me from there.
Okay.
I actually have been telling my clients that these are options for years now.
You have?
I have, because I think it's my role to tell people about all the options, even if it's not something that I can particularly offer them. And some agents actually do offer these plans. We just choose not to because of the errors and omissions.
Do you get
on
paid?
It. Right. Some of the plans do pay commissions to agents.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I keep calling them a plan. Sorry. That's an
insurance
term.
We understand.
A program. It does pay commissions. But I've been telling my clients about these programs for years. I have had a handful move to those programs. I haven't.
You have.
I have. And I have not had a single one come back who's moved to one of those programs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe they've gone to another agent that they liked better. That's entirely possible.
Impossible.
But
totally impossible when you're around.
Those who have moved, none of them have come back.
Okay, mm-hmm. So you do see them, and
they
are legitimate competition to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I knew they were around, but I'm not involved with the day-to-day stuff, so I don't see this as much as you do. Well, one thing that people say, healthcare is a right. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a right. And I say, no, healthcare is a responsibility of each of us.
Right.
So how do you how do you fit yourself in that slot?
Well, I think everybody has a right to basic healthcare and emergency healthcare. But there is a difference between the funding mechanism for that healthcare. And I think that's where the health insurance piece comes into it. Health insurance is a funding mechanism for healthcare. It's
mm-hmm.
not the healthcare itself.
That's right.
Right.
That's
just the way our system has developed.
It's part of the system.
Correct. So I do believe everybody should be able to go to a family doctor and get their annual screenings done, right? If there's a medical emergency, everybody should be able to go to the emergency room and get healthcare.
So you're including that in the right side.
Correct.
Okay.
But there's a lot of discretionary health care that happens in the United States because we as consumers have grown up believing that, you know, maybe that first MRI wasn't right. I need to go in and get that second one done, right? Uh-huh. Or I went and got that first MRI done at Duke, but now my new doctor, my new orthopedist, right, is over at Rex. So now I need to go to Rex and get another MRI done because my doctor works with Rex and not Duke. So there's a lot of duplicative healthcare that takes place that we may not necessarily need and can weed out of the healthcare system in order to help drive down costs.
So it's, but it's tough to clean that up.
Oh yeah,
I don't know how you're going to do it. Those are good examples of people bouncing around to get extra stuff done, and that's true. And you know, I don't think 30 years ago that was happening.
No, people went to their doctor, right, and their doctor was there in the area. And we are in a metropolitan area, which just kind of escalates it.
And because we're loaded with medical services here.
Oh, we are so lucky here with the great institutions that we have. And it makes choice that much easier. But when there's no consumerism in choice, right, when I don't care how much it's going to cost me for that knee replacement surgery because I only have $7,350 on the hook, right?
Yeah.
I don't care if it costs me $50,000 at, you know, X hospital and $30,000 at Y hospital. It doesn't matter because I'm not going to see that whole bill anyways, right? Mm-hmm. I want to go to whichever place is closest to my house so it's easier to come and go for my appointments, right? I want to go to whichever one my friend went to and had a good experience. That's what we use when shopping for healthcare.
It used to be the areas had cost factors. Mm-hmm. Do areas have cost factors?
They do. They very much do. Mm-hmm. So where you live in the state, where you live
in North Carolina,
the country,
there are various. Really?
We do. We have risk area factors that help drive what the monthly premium is going to be for your health insurance.
So where's the cheapest place to live in North Carolina if you want to keep your premiums down?
Well, actually, living in the metropolitan areas is usually some of the cheapest areas to be in, but that's just because we have so much competition that drives down price. But we're also seeing the institution of narrow networks that we didn't see before. Anybody who bought a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan in the Triangle felt this 2 years ago, I think it was, when Blue Cross said, we're no longer going to offer our great big PPO that has, you know, 90% of the state in it, in the network. Now, if you live in the Triangle, you have to choose between our Blue Value Network, limited network, or our Blue Local limited network. And each one of those networks...
So there's two levels of that, of services.
Well, there's two networks that are driven around hospital systems.
Yeah.
So Blue Local is driven around Duke and Wake Med. Blue Value is driven around UNC and Rex. So now you have to choose your allegiance, right, to one or the other.
So why would I want to choose one over the other?
Well, that's a personal choice based off of where your doctors are. The prices are fairly similar between
pricing them.
Prices are within a percentage point of each other, so it's not a big difference. But the price point between those limited networks and the great big Blue Cross Blue Shield network, that's almost a 20% difference. Mm-hmm. So if you live in one of the counties like Guilford, where only the great big Blue Cross Blue Shield network is available.
Is that the only place? That's the only thing you can buy?
Correct.
There.
In Guilford County, at least for 2017. You're stuck paying 20% more than your counterpart here in Carrboro that has access to the Blue Value or the Blue Local network.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're limited in your doctors when you're in one of these limited networks, but it also drives your premium down.
Mm-hmm. So I come to you as a prospect in Carrboro, and I'm 30-year-old, and I have a wife and two children. What's the best deal for me?
Well, first we're going to see whether or not you're likely to qualify for tax credits, right? And whether or not you have access to insurance somewhere else.
Correct.
The cost of health insurance for an individual has gotten so high such that sometimes it makes sense for you to join a group plan somewhere else. Maybe you're offered insurance at work, but you didn't take it because it was too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe your kid can join the university plan here at UNC, but you had them on your plan at work instead, right? Or you had them on your own personal plan because it was easier. Well, sometimes it means dividing the family up in order to get the cheapest possible price.
So you have to do that sometimes, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I just split a family up last week because the two kids... one needed a lot more health care, so that kid actually ended up on a richer plan. That child took a silver plan. The parents didn't
through Blue Cross
because that was all they had in their county.
Uh-huh.
the parents didn't need that level of coverage. So we didn't want to pay for a silver level plan for the parents because they didn't need that much health care. So they took a bronze plan. And then the other child who was in college, we went and put her on the university plan. So we took that whole family, and they're going to have four different plans in that family, but it gets them the lowest possible price.
So what's the overall out of pocket for that family? I mean, everybody's got their own out of pocket.
Correct, but remember, nowadays everybody's capped at that, at least for 2018, $7,350. Okay. This year it's $7,150.
So, but there's three $7,350s each.
Correct.
Because you got three policies there. The
correct.
Parents and the two kids.
Yep, you got it.
Boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, how long did it take you to figure all that out? I mean, you had to analyze the needs of this family and come up with the product that they could afford.
Sure. I mean, it takes some time on the phone to do the analysis, but I think the moral of the story is unless this is what you do full time, and like I said, there are no part time agents anymore.
Yeah,
those are gone, right?
Yeah.
If healthcare reform didn't do away with them, then the commissions being cut dramatically did away with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So don't go it alone. Use a professional. There's less of us out there than there were. It doesn't cost you any more to use an agent typically, although some agents are charging consulting fees for their time.
Sometimes they can get away with that, and maybe it's okay. Back when I was doing all this, it was state controlled, and I always felt that state control was okay. Even in this state, I got pretty friendly with the previous insurance commissioner.
Sure.
And we have a new insurance commissioner now, and I don't know anything about him.
I
haven't been able to get him over here. But I've always felt that state control was helpful as opposed to everything out of Washington. Because you can deal with Raleigh, or you can deal with Albany, or you can deal with Columbus, Ohio, as opposed to dealing with Washington.
Correct. And every state is so unique. Every population is so unique with what they expect and what they want from their health care. That it's very different. I'm working with a lady now who is trying to decide if she wants to retire in Raleigh or Boston.
Oh, really? Okay.
And in Boston, they expanded Medicaid in Massachusetts, right?
Sure.
So she can actually get far lower health care costs in Boston. But the cost of living is higher in Boston, obviously.
Yeah.
And so she's actually weighing those two factors to try and decide where it is that she wants to retire. Now, my point to her was, you're only going to be under 65 for a couple of years. Once you hit Medicare, it's pretty equal across the states, right? So, but every population is very different. She was looking to see if the policies would cover acupuncture. Well, we don't cover acupuncture in North Carolina, but where she's from, they do.
This is hilarious. Here you are analyzing people, not only for what's available, but their whole social, their whole personal life, where they're going to live and how they're going to survive in one place or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Liz, you're terrific. It's about time to shut down here. You've been so nice to come over from Raleigh and from your office in Winston-Salem and stop here in Carrboro. I should buy your dinner, but I'm not going to. Maybe we'll do that some other time. But anyway, you're listening to WCOM. As I mentioned, the health underwriters of the Triangle Association underwrite this show. Also, one of the other underwriters is our dear friend, retired Ambassador Michael Cotter, who's been on this show about 12 times. Mike is a full-time member of the Foreign Service, and when he comes on the show, you'll learn an awful lot about what's going on in the international world because he's still well connected. I'm also underwritten by the Triangle by Tim Hux and his organization. Tim is a certified financial planner, and he has an organization called Rising Tide, which I guess if you deal with his money, you're doing okay. And we also have an underwriter right here in this little village of Carrboro who says she will support community radio until the end of time. And that's quite a ways down the road for you anyway. Not so. Next week, we're going to change channels. We're going to talk to a couple who recently had the woman is an ordained minister. Her husband works for the city of Durham, but she was given a sabbatical by her church, and they went overseas to several different places and took a 100-mile hike on a trail. I think it has a famous name, and you'll hear about it next week in Spain. The family, the mother, the father, and the teenage boy took this 100-mile walk in part of their sabbatical. It's kind of a religious event. So that'll be part of our program next week. Religion doesn't touch healthcare, but sometimes you need it, don't you?
That's right.
You need a lot of faith. Liz, you're terrific. I'll see you at the November meeting.
Yes, sir.
And say hello to your parents. Give your mother a hug and your father a slap on the back, and tell them I think they're all, you guys are my favorite family in many worlds, not just health insurance, but the way you support each other and the way you have contributed your professions to this profession.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So the L.A. Bachelor and the Bachelor Pad will be coming on shortly. He does his broadcasting from home, so nobody else is coming into the studio. But stay tuned. You'll hear the Bachelor Pad in a while. So that's it, folks. We'll see you next week, and you'll hear me next week, and we'll hear our guests, Cherry and Andy, who will be talking about their world in the world of sabbaticals, particularly in Spain.